We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. It's June here in Washington, D.C., which means we are sweating up in the Federalist podcast studio where normally we have two people. Today we have three. We have a whole Federalist crew here to celebrate the release of our colleague Eddie Scarry's newest book called Liberal Misery, a timely title, a timely topic. And we're joined by Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist, co-founder of RightForge. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to be here.
So, Eddie, Liberal Misery is the book's title. The cover of it is like a crying emoji, kind of iconic, actually. But there's a subtitle, I feel like, that actually really explains your thesis. Mm-hmm. So tell us about, give us the full title. I couldn't remember it, so I punted to Eddie. But tell us the full title and then what the thesis really is.
Sure. So the full title being Liberal Misery, How the Hateful Left Sucks Joy Out of Everything and Everyone. And actually, largely inspired by Chris Bedford. He helped
because he's
with
so hateful and miserable.
Largely inspired by life experience.
Yes, he helped a lot with the subtitle there. The thesis just being this gut feeling that I had. I'll tell you the inspiration and the thesis. This gut feeling that I and so many people have about dealing with liberals, especially when you live in a city like Washington, D.C., which are just kind of hotbeds of liberalism. Having this gut feeling of why these interactions I'm having with people who are liberal of the left, they are Democratic voters, that there's conflict. Always, you're always on the verge of conflict with these people. And there is this, in my book, I get into the broader policy implications of this with the Black Lives Matter rioting, the COVID, the pandemic, the COVID nags about the mask and anything else, with January 6th and that looming supposed white supremacy threat to the country. We get into all those policy issues in this book, in Liberal Misery. However, the real point I wanted to make was that this is not just a political angle that they come at this with. Hmm. These people, this is their natural state of being. This is their actual resting state is misery.
resting misery.
And depression, sadness.
Sure. And every one of those things is proven. I was surprised to find, having this gut feeling, and that so many people who are listening and watching this will have had, is actually backed up by all sorts of data, survey studies that show that liberals profess themselves to be less happy with their marriages, less happy with their jobs, less happy with where they live. They're more likely to block someone on social media because they didn't like what they said. This is literally how granular we get. A Clinton, so we're going back to 2016, a Clinton voter did not want to sit, was more likely to say they do not want to sit next to a Trump voter. It would be the opposite. If you ask the Trump voters the same question, it's like 60 to 70% says, oh, I have no problem sitting with it.
Who was that columnist who moved out to the suburbs during COVID and it was in the Pacific Northwest and her neighbor was a Trump voter?
It was in the LA Times.
He plowed her driveway after a snowstorm and she like wrote this piece about how awful, like how she had to ask him not to do that because of the hatefulness of him and she didn't want his racist. Like this person is obviously a good person. Does that make me a racist too? It's an unhappy person.
For sure. And I think that touches on something we get into the book about the all-consuming, how politics has just become all-consuming for liberals. And I think this has been true for a while, but it is now so evident and on steroids at this point that there is no denying it. You can't look away from it. And so many people feel this stuff, and that's why I wrote Liberal Misery.
Yeah, I was talking to a journalism class this past weekend, and one of the pieces of advice I gave them was something that was given to me early in journalism in D.C., which is, like, make sure you have hobbies. Make sure you have things you do. Make sure that you keep on going to church. If you're raised going to church, you get your friend groups, your food groups, your like whether you're into games or whatever, like sports, like keep other things and not just politics.
Organized crime,
yeah, you know, low level dealings.
Entrepreneurial, yeah.
Very entrepreneurial. And if you get onto these protests, like if you get on a Roe v. Wade, the Dobbs protests and everything, it feels like a lot of those people, like that's their music festival. Mm-hmm. That's their church. That's their social engagement. That's their after-school activity. Like, that's their work break. They just go down there, and this is where they find their satisfaction, Which is why it's always so filled with them. It's why they're singing like songs and doing weird dances. It's like that's where they get their happiness, which is not a good place to get happiness.
Oh, right. And it is their identity. And that's the thing is when you're having even, which again, was kind of the inspiration of the book, having these normal, no, I shouldn't say normal, having everyday encounters with someone who happens to be a liberal on a dime can be complete havoc. Always on the verge of conflict, ready to fight you. Controversy and conflict is almost what they thrive on anymore. And to run into that so many times, and then to find all this data that backs that up, was really surprising to me. But that was something, that was the reason why I wanted to write this book and show people, everyone out there, that what you're experiencing and feeling about this is not in your head. It is borne out by data, and many, many people feel the exact same thing.
I want to get into some of the data, but two books come to mind when you're talking about this, and Chris is opening his beer. Eddie, I suggest you do the same. He's sitting there with an unopened beer, a watermelon.
I just wanted, you know, you're not allowed to drink at like the opera or something. I found this at last time I'm ever going to an opera, I'll tell you. But I thought,
how the hell did they let you into an opera?
I thought
they let Irish people in opera.
Yeah. I thought it was about to be a quiet moment, a loud moment, and I thought it was the right moment. It turned out it was like it was a modern symphony, and it just ended really quickly. And all you hear is throughout the Kennedy Center.
He tried to John Wilkes Booth a beer.
Yeah, wait for the loud moment.
Yeah. So
that was dark.
Eddie, two books come to mind. The first is Coming Apart by Charles Murray, and the second is Culture of Narcissism, because as you were talking about, by Christopher Lash, as you were talking, I'm thinking, okay, so what changed? Because a lot of people would think back to miserable, quote unquote, miserable conservative parents flooding TV stations with hate mail over Dawson's Creek. Something like that, right? Tipper Gore, not a Republican, of course.
That show was degenerate.
Ugh, I love that show. But it was degenerate. Tipper Gore, coming out against rap music, and you know, this label may have been applied to conservatives in the past, but conservatives are now basically the movement of Dave Rubin, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who is, I don't know that you could call him conservative, but is, you know, on that generally, directionally with that side. And Christopher Lash wrote about in Culture of Narcissism, basically how this modern, I guess, educated liberal is so self-obsessed that it becomes absurd and almost self-loathing. So as you were writing this book, what is it that you can sort of put your finger on and say, this is what's making liberals miserable?
Well, I think there are probably a lot of answers for that. What I can for sure say, and this is almost a mental exercise I do with almost anything with modern within going over the last like even 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, almost everything you see in terms of what sets off a liberal and what makes them angry can be traced to the 2016 election. And it was this idea that someone, this complete outsider being Donald Trump, of course, this complete outsider who represented all the things that the left has come to hate. Why they have come to hate this, I think that's another book for another day. But everything they've come to hate, masculinity, independence for sure, someone who doesn't need anything from Washington, doesn't need anything from anybody, and coming out and saying what's on his mind and saying, and I believe that everyone should have the right to do whatever, you know, this is somewhat of an exercise also that I would like to do. I would like to hold up a picture of a spider or scorpion or monster or something to liberals, and then also hold up a picture of a nice family riding a boat. Which one makes them angrier? I think we all know the answer to that. And why would they be so vehement about seeing a family ride a boat? It's because they don't like the independence and the idea that you have cheap gas, you can afford these types of things to do. This is something that makes you happy. That is just something that they have become this type of people. Why they have become that type of people, I'm not exactly sure, but I will just say again, it's all backed up by studies. They say themselves they're more likely to say that they are unhappy than anyone on the right, and certainly independents.
This mental illness has been growing for a long time there. Like PCU, Politically Correct University, made fun of it 20, 30 years ago, I guess now, the movie. And I remember reading a column in a Boston newspaper when Mitt Romney was governor. There was a boat crash in the lake that he was vacationing, and one of his sons, or his two sons, went out on jet skis and saved some people. And this column was like, well, of course they did. Of course, because they're just perfect, privileged, rich, white kids. And it's like, you know, they just saved somebody from a boat wreck. And this column was infuriated. It's like, this, like, I feel like this, I think Trump brought it out of a lot of people and it's like completely deranged them. But the politics of his life was always there.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, and it's something I thought about a lot, because I would bet every single person watching this and listening to this, and you guys, I would be interested if you had the same experience. People, if it didn't happen in 2016, it would have happened in 2020. You said that Trump brought it out of them. That phrase is so true, because the thing was, I had a pretty wide circle of friends in D.C., during the time I've lived here like around 12 years. I think 2016, it caused a lot of tension between me and my friends, almost all of which were liberal here. But 2020, for sure, they made it known that they were not happy about the way things were going and the things that I believed and the things I wrote and the things I said, because I do it for a living. But I lost quite a few friends. And I think that
this is a you problem, Eddie.
No.
This isn't them.
No, because...
Well, maybe a me problem, too. I had the same thing.
Sure. For sure. Exactly.
Yes, it is
saying.
Both of you.
I think that it is a tendency on the left, because, again, this is all backed up by data. I'm telling you that there was a study that I think was done at Duke that asked, it was after the 2016 election, asked students, are you, if you're a Clinton supporter or Trump supporter voter, are you okay with having a roommate who voted the opposite of you? Clinton voters said no. Around 30% said they would be okay having a Trump supporter as a roommate. You look at the Trump supporter, it was like 60 to 70% said they were, or 60 to 75% said, I'm totally fine having someone who thought the voted the opposite way. And so, no, this is not a me and Chris problem. This is a left problem.
Something we talk about a lot on this podcast is how recent changes to the way humans live their everyday lives have caused all of these other downstream changes that are pretty major and that we don't actually think about that often. For instance, did you know that poor sleep can cause weight gain, mood issues, poor mental health, and lower productivity? Think about this. Sleeping less than 6 to 7 hours per night is actually linked to reduced white blood cell count. And those white blood cells protect our body against illnesses and diseases. They fight viruses, they fight bacteria, and so much more. I am one of those people that absolutely needs critical sleep. I need absolutely more sleep than most people probably do, but it's a huge difference, and we all know that because we all need it. Introducing Beam Dream. Beam is the world's most innovative functional wellness brand with unique products for everything from sleep to recovery. And today, our listeners get a special discount available for Beam's sleep product, Dream Powder, their best-selling healthy hot cocoa. It contains natural, sleep-promoting premium ingredients, triple lab-tested, no THC, and you wake up feeling refreshed, which, in my opinion, is just about the best feeling in the world. 98% of people surveyed fall asleep faster when taking Beam Dream, and 99% of people experience better sleep quality. You just mix Beam Dream into hot water or milk, you stir it, and you enjoy it before bedtime. Just taking the stuff out of the box, I took a look at it and said, this is awesome. You can find out why Forbes and New York Times are all talking about Beam and why it's trusted by the world's top business professionals and top athletes. Don't love it? You can get your money back guaranteed. For a limited time, get up to 35% off when you go to shopbeam.com/Federalist and use code Federalist at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/Federalist and use code Federalist for up to 35% off. Well, and so the reason that I brought up, one of the reasons I brought up Lash is because I'm curious as to whether this is liberals self-reporting misery and like they want to be miserable so badly that they make themselves miserable. Like it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, are they actually more unhappy or are they just reporting levels of...
They cry about the rainforest.
Well, yes. You cry about babies, as you should.
I don't cry.
I don't think I've actually ever seen you cry.
Why
which
would
is,
you have?
That's sort of surprising. But so the point is, I mean, I think there are some political topics that are worth crying over. And I feel like we would all agree with that.
Sure, girl.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's important. But I do really wonder if there's a reporting discrepancy in that if you are on the left, and this is where Charles Murray comes in, you're more likely to cluster in these super zips. You're more likely to be an educated elite who reads the same things, watches the same things increasingly in ways that, you know, we're very divided in terms of what we consume and what we believe. And that has all kinds of implications. And I wonder if there's part of the left that, in the sense that, like Abigail Schreier wrote in Irreversible Damage, a lot of girls, there's a sense of belonging that comes with reporting that you're mentally, you have a condition, mm-hmm. or that you're mentally ill, or you have some type of malady. Is any of this explained by reporting, and or is it that, like, this artificial sense of misery has become very real?
I think there is something to that, in the sense of and I also would say that the idea of having suffered and feeling some oppression or identifying with it, I think that, you know, that's a form of virtue signaling in and of itself. And so, regardless of whether a person is actually living a perfectly fine life, I think there is something that unites them behind, you know, the idea of oppression and suffering.
There's lots of gender dysphoria, for instance, being diagnosed that is absolutely not gender dysphoria.
Right, exactly. No, yeah, any you could put your hand in a bag of mental and emotional afflictions, pull one out, and liberals will almost 100% be more likely to be the ones to say that they identify with that. Or say it's a
who was
that
CNN or MSNBC correspondent who said he just realized that even though he's attracted to women, he's queer, and it took him forever to figure that out.
It's like Jake Tapper. Just my best guess. I don't know.
Welcome to Eddie's DMs, Jake Tapper, because he loves to, when he gets criticized, he loves to.
He's gonna slip right in.
Oh God,
he's a weird dude.
Hide your kids, hide your wives.
But I would otherwise. You're asking if you think that if there's something to the
they report misery in higher numbers because it's virtue signaling, basically.
Yeah, and I think that is true. I think the closest I got to any kind of you're asking about reporting about it, anything like that's more sophisticated, I guess. There was this idea, there was a study I came across that showed how, well, the reason why liberals say these things, profess to be less happy in all these areas, is because they're so preoccupied mentally with inequality and the constant inequality that they see. But I don't think that answers for why they're unhappy in very in social interactions and in personal relationships, their marriage. Why would you say, and I'm not joking, this study is in the book, Liberal Misery, that if you are liberal, you are more likely to say you are less happy with your marriage. Why would you say that? Why would you say, I don't want to sit at lunch with someone who didn't vote the way I did? That has nothing to do with the idea of inequality.
I have a clear theory, which is if you read Eat, Pray, Love, a really good example of it. No, don't do it. You can watch the movie, though.
It's peak nihilism.
It's peak moral relativism. It's peak postmodernism. But it's this, if you destroy the concept of fundamental truth and reality, then everything can become sort of fungible. And like your marriage is something that you get out of if you're merely unhappy, as opposed to like whether it is a stable union for the reproduction of children and the benefit of the community, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you can just, if marriage, which is like a bedrock institution of society, becomes sort of relative or based on these morally relative principles, it can just spiral really quickly.
Yeah, if you lose track of those eternal truths and those basic truths, and they have ejected them.
Right.
They say that they're all just relative, none of it's real. And I think that, well, there is definitely, like you guys are talking about, I think, and I know that Eddie's book's about this, it has manifested itself as reality. Like, they are now unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
They're spiraling. The sadness, I mean, you look at, like, Greta Thunberg, who's obviously someone who's, like, easily manipulated by adults, a child, and you see how unhappy
that I always get so nervous when he starts talking about
I know, because like I'm the only person who like talks about how she's autistic and how that impacts her thinking. We're not allowed to do that, but Emily gets really nervous. But I mean, Greta thinks the world's going to end in 5 years or 10 years. Like AOC thinks the world is going to end in 9 years. Like they look.
She won't have children because of it, even though they would certainly make her happy.
Yeah, I mean,
to your point.
They think that there's this existential threat. They look at this basic things that have existed for all of modern history, like a moving new modern history, like a moving vehicles and factories and industry, and everything they see is planet death. They don't see the prosperity and jobs and creation out of nothing and mastery, and they don't see the cheap, the affordable goods that they have. They look at children and they think like there's no future. They look at homelessness and poverty, something we've had forever, or law and order, and they think slavery, inequality. Like, they look at the sun and they think like the end of the world is coming, and they look at a church and they think oppression. It's like, mm-hmm. they look at a picnic and they think patriarchy. Like, how could you possibly be happy? You go crazy.
Or you're about
daddy's birth. I think about this a lot. This is totally anecdotal, but I swear it comes from, this is real. It really happened. Was a friend of mine who is a total liberal and works in Democratic politics, worked for environmentalism, causes campaign for basically every leading Democrat you can think of. It was around, I think, St. Patrick's Day last year. They had something planned, the office did where he worked. They were going to go like to have a happy hour after working hours. And because there was, I forget if it had something to do with the border. Oh, no. What it was the, do you remember the Asian spa killings mm-hmm. or shootings or yep. whatever? So that happened. And because at the time there was this lie about anti-Asian
hate. The Ku Klux Klan was doing it?
Yeah, there was this lie about anti-Asian hate and how it was white supremacy, even though almost every single attack against an Asian you can find a black person is the one who did it. But in this case, it happened to be a white person who had this weird mental problem with like sexual, he was an incel basically.
Yeah.
My friend, he was saying how we had this St. Patrick's Day thing planned for after work, we know to happy hour. One of the much younger staffers or interns or something said, should we cancel that because this just happened? Because this, like, Asian shooting, and it's like, they weren't going to send out a press release about going to St. Patrick's Day happy hour. But I remember my friend who's this hardcore liberal saying, he said, you know, the fact is you're happy and they just, that you can't be happy anymore.
Because there's sadness in the world?
Yeah, because there's so many things that are so wrong that for you to be happy is wrong in and of itself. And that is just how liberals think anymore.
So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can get buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotiony feel either. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. So you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. Those roll and go anywhere MyPillows. You can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to take on vacation or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at mypillow.com/federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting mypillow.com/federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist.
I used to think like that when I was a 16, angsty teenager. My parents would be like, do your homework. I'm like, how could I do my homework when this awful thing is happening in Myanmar or something? They'd be like, shut up, kid, and do your homework.
I used to not wear clothing made in sweatshops. That was a face.
Now that's all you wear?
I mean, it's impossible not to.
Yeah, it's difficult to buy made in America. I always try to shop made in America, with like Etsy. I'm on arts and crafts shops to try and find made in America. Yeah. It's so difficult.
I started wearing a lot of American apparel at the time. It's like 2008.
Yeah. Good for you, because there are little kids that are. But I mean,
well, it turned out they had resisted unionization, and it was a whole it was a lot of immigrant labor in questionable conditions. We now know more about that, but this is actually a segue into a question I wanted to ask Eddie, which is this question of globalization and globalization in the intersection of technology. Like in a high tech world, globalization is an inevitability. There is no way around it, and it seems to be part of what makes young people miserable, because you can at any given moment, we can solve a problem here in the United States, just one single problem that we have. We can do something, we can take steps, we can say we did exactly what the left wants and just got rid of the Second Amendment. We got rid of it. They would still be absolutely miserable, because now, thanks to technology, you can zoom into any corner of the globe at any given moment and see abject suffering and misery, because there are billions of people alive on this planet. You can see the abject suffering and misery of people throughout time. Mm-hmm. The fake story from Canada last summer about the indigenous people who had allegedly been like children, who had allegedly been killed and buried en masse, which turned out not to be true.
We found graveyards at Catholic churches. Yeah. Murder. It's like, yeah. Every Catholic church has a graveyard.
Right, but they're seeking the misery of the past, the misery of the present, and the misery of the future, and to the point where there is no satisfaction. It seems like this is an endless hole.
And I think that if you talk with the most, I hate to even use the word extreme example of this, because it's just become such the norm, especially when you're right. talking with the college kids. It's... Well, like I'll give you another anecdote, but again, this is one of those things where a friend of mine was telling me how I asked him. I said, "Oh, you never told me about the cruise. How was the cruise you just went on?" And he said,
"Through native lands,
through native waters." He asked that, or he said to me, I didn't bring that. I guess I didn't tell you because I have a roommate who." I can tell that it bothers him when I bring that stuff up, when I bring up the idea that I had a good time and that I did something that's costly, and then because that just means I'm privileged. And of course, you got to check your privilege. That's the thing you got to do every day. And don't talk about how happy you are.
Privileged people don't go on cruises. They go on crossings.
Yeah, they don't go on cruises. That's right.
Like the Titanic going from England to New York. That's not a cruise. Okay, that's a crossing.
I would say, and the thing is, also, to your point about the globalization aspect, is who are you texting?
Sorry, it's my boyfriend.
I've always wanted to Colorado. You did it. Eddie's brave.
I'm like, who? Like, I'm here. I'm answering your question.
He got his iPad out, and you didn't say anything. This is misogyny, sexism, misogyny.
Well, he assumed correctly that I was doing something important and relevant, and I was looking up Eddie's other books, because this is a question I actually have for you, is how the heck are you so prolific? I wrote one book and it was horrible as hell. I never want to do it again.
Well, the book was good, but
In 3 years? Yeah, well, keeping down four running jobs?
I'm a little bit of a sadist in this aspect. I will say, of the four books...
So you can say you're miserable. Yeah, you enjoy misery.
It is the most miserable part of my
author
life.
Author misery.
Of the four, I've written three, including this one, have been just shorter books. The big monster I wrote, I don't know that I'll ever do that again. But that's how I do it. I just want to finish up the answer to your question, though, about you also see this and say, I don't think I included any of them in liberal misery, but if you ask liberals about where would you rather live somewhere else in the U.S., which mm-hmm. we are, without a doubt, the least racist, most free country there is in the world.
Yes.
And they will tell you time and time again, they don't think it's fair here. They'd rather live somewhere else, and yet they never leave. But that's just another form of the misery and anger and bitterness and spitefulness that they feel all the time.
Can I say, I was talking to somebody very high profile, on the left.
I'm right here.
Oh. No, not you. Well, you are physically on my left, but yeah. And I was talking about the trip that I had taken to the border with John Daniel Davidson, and about how these folks were fleeing. They didn't all have legitimate asylum claims, because that's sort of a very narrow legal category to qualify for asylum, but they were fleeing gang violence and economic hardship, et cetera, et cetera. It was horrible. And this person said, but they're coming here to the United States. This is a very bad place to be poor. And I thought, No. Nicaragua is a very bad place to be poor. It's like an amazing sense of defeatism. And like, I don't think any of us would disagree that sort of the cultural elite, the corporate elite, has created a very unfair regime. And in some ways, it is oppressive to working class people on the cultural and the economic level. But we lose perspective so easily at how wonderful it is to be alive in 2022.
Yeah, those tourists will go to Nicaragua and they'll take pictures out the bus window of like women doing laundry in a river. Like, look how quaint, look how simple their life is. It's like, no, they don't have a washing machine.
Right.
That's extreme poverty.
And they are probably extremely religious in ways that you would be very uncomfortable with.
Yeah, and the corporate aspect of this, as you just mentioned, that's another thing. I was asked this in a couple other different interviews, and it's something I did not think of, but now I know as I've thought it through. You would probably say that within the last few years, you have noticed this extreme virtue signaling by corporations. Everything has to be supporting. We have to release a statement about trans people. We have to say something about gay pride. It has to be about abortion. It has to. You cannot name one cause that they mentioned that has to do with, that comes from the right, that conservatives believe in. Why is that? It's not necessarily that corporations are just super lefty people and it's run by lefty people. It's actually that they know the people that will be pissed off if they don't release a statement about that are on the left. And what do? They boycott. They do social media campaigns where they trash your corporation.
Thousands of Twitter bots. Thousands.
Well, it has an effect. And I just real quick, the right never. You don't have these organized campaigns and whatnot that say, well, why didn't you say something about this pro-life? Why didn't you say something that's in favor of women's sports and keeping women, keeping that a thing that's really a feminist cause, it should be. They never say that. They know instead that it's the left who's going to get upset. And that on steroids was the 2020 election, which was when you saw all our biggest cities, all run by Democrats, board up all the stores, all the shops, window fronts had to be boarded up not because Biden might win. It was boarded up because Trump might win. And they know those people, all the people, all the business owners, and the same thing goes to the corporate level. They know who is going to act out if things don't go.
People who live on Capitol Hill had to have plans to get out.
Oh, I had to get out. I've told you about this, but
yeah, you had to get out.
Yeah.
We were working here in the office in Capitol Hill, and I was discussing it with senior ed. So they're like, okay, well, what happens if the rioting starts to move over this way? Probably won't, but we have to think about these things.
Cancel culture is coming to your bank, and holding the wrong political views might soon leave you out in the cold. I'm Bill Walton. On the latest episode of The Bill Walton Show, Todd Zwicky, Paul Watkins, and I discuss what is already happening, how the Biden administration is already pursuing this agenda, and what we can do about it. This progressive culture offensive is relentless. It's coming for you, and you won't hear about this anywhere else. Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But I mean, liberals are good. Like, they've been good previously, the left, at like bringing their misery to their cornflake decisions. Like, what cereal am I going to buy? Well, which one's made in Israel? Or like, which one does this? And it's like, they'll make those decisions. But it has gotten to a point where people on the right probably really ought to become more informed consumers, because they're giving money to corporations that hate them and hate their kids and hate their way of life. So we have to stop. I mean, I don't want to be one of those people who's like, well, this product's not ethical for this reason, this product. But I can be someone who's like, hey, this company hates me.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And the same thing, there was another radio interview I did, Stacey on the Right, just a shout out for her.
Love Stacey on the Right.
Yeah, I had a really good time with that last night. She was saying how I hate to do this, but, my children, I tell them now that you should marry someone who's like-minded, because I think... like me, I would say, even when I was going through dating in 2020, I was like, I'm open to, I don't care if you're liberal or not. It never made a difference to me. But then I realized that I can't do this. I can't make something work on a personal level, on a romantic level with someone
not because of me, but because of them. They completely reject me. It's going to be a conflict and a fight all the time. And I think that's why I use the word misery. You know, there's a phrase, misery loves company. That's a phrase for a reason, because it spreads. And the people who feel that emotion want it to spread, and it is spreading. And I'm not certain that there's a way out of it other than
cancel the happy hour.
Other than exactly what you're saying, which is to respond in kind, is basically what it has become.
That's true about relationships. Sorry,
No, you go.
Is you might be able to have a different, like, some political ideas on taxation and spending, but if you and your partner don't have an exact, like, shared values on the basic and fundamentals of life, then you're not going to get along.
Well, this is coming apart. I mean, this is how Charles Murray said that, like, he did a scientific research on this, and how we're clustering in these educated elite bubbles or working class bubbles, which means we consume vastly different media. We're, like, religious on different levels. We marry at different levels. And we just, like, really don't have any firm, like, the social fabric is torn. Mm-hmm. It just really doesn't exist anymore. And Eddie, I'm curious as to how your friends have they been maybe receptive to your thesis? Because I also do sense that people are starting to, the God-shaped hole, people are starting to realize that there's a hole and mm-hmm. that maybe it's God-shaped. I mean, this is the whole, like, Jordan Peterson thing. Like, why does this book sell gangbusters when nobody expects it to? Probably because people realize something is wrong. They don't know quite what it is, but they realize something is really wrong. Have you had any conversations with people since you started this project where you're like, they might be coming around?
Yes, actually, as a matter of fact, today someone on Instagram messaged me, someone I don't know, never met, works on a farm somewhere. He said to me, I don't agree with you politically, but you seem like a fun person.
He is so wrong.
I think that it's too bad that most people don't, or I should say liberals, don't feel that way anymore. They can't see the commonality you might have. They can't agree to disagree. I think that things are coming apart, as you said. I wanted to write this book again for people, liberal misery, for people to understand that you are not alone. The feelings and the interactions you're having are shared by so many other people. But again, it's just too bad that we've come this far.
So where can people, where's the best place for you as an author for people to pick up Liberal Misery, How the Hateful Left Has Sucked the Joy Out of Everything and Everyone?
Wow, he has a good memory.
Yeah, there you go. I love that.
I enjoy my colleague's work.
I even have to think about it. The title, I'm like, oh my God. But the best place 100% is Amazon.
Boo!
But it's good for sales.
See, we're miserable too.
You can go to, if you just want to go to eddiescary.com, scary has two R's, we'll redirect you. And also, I know for sure, if you go to a bookseller you prefer, that you knew they don't have the book and you want it, you just have to ask them, say, can you get this book for me? And they will find a way to get it. Those are the best ways.
We're so proud of Eddie. I'm just, like, very glad we have Eddie on our staff.
Me too.
Because it has been a wonderful, I think, marriage of Eddie Scary and the Federalist over the past year.
We're hitting a year, yeah.
Yeah.
We just hit a year.
Yep.
And I'm so happy to be here.
So celebrate with us by buying Eddie's book. Go to Amazon if you must. But it is called Liberal Misery, Liberal Misery, Liberal Misery. Don't forget it. Make sure you pick it up. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. Not a fan of sweatshop labor, I would like to clarify. But I did realize.
I used to be unhappy. I used to not use sweatshop labor.
At the tender age of 15, that having hyper stringent standards about these things was literally impossible. You cannot find much ethically made clothing.
Yeah, good luck finding American made flip flops.
Seriously, yes. Joined today by Christopher Bedford, senior editor at The Federalist, co founder at RightForge, and Eddie Scary, author of Liberal Misery, DC columnist at The Federalist. We will be back soon with more Federalist Radio Hour. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.